and just give me that countryside.
New York is where I'd rather stay. I get allergic smelling hay. I just adore a penthouse view. Darling, I love you, but give me Park Avenue.
The chores.
The stores.
Fresh air.
Times Square.
You are my wife.
All our Freeform Friday episodes are available free of charge for the planet to anyone that can make it to crusadechannel.com and click on the shows tab, and then you'll see the Freeform Friday archives. You can download, watch a video to your little heart's content here. This is Freeform Friday for 1 July 2022, brought to you by us and the Founders Pass Gift Membership Effort. We need you still. We said we're going to double the size of the listening audience by giving away gift memberships and allowing you guys to make me an offer. A gift membership with the latest price increase for 1 year is now worth $169.45. $169.45. You can make me an offer and make a friend, family member, or enemy a crusading, crusade channel listener with all the bells and whistles, chat room, downloads, premium stream, the whole shebang, any amount that you want to give us. So go to crusadechannel.com/gift, crusadechannel.com/gift. Put into the box at the top of that form the amount that you can afford. And remember, if you're going to sign one up, then you have to really do three. Because there's a 1 in 3 shot that whoever you send it to is actually going to cash it in. So I hope you'll do that. Again, crusadechannel.com/gift. There's no trick to that. It's a simple form. Fill it out. You'll need your friend's real name, real email address, your credit card number. Click submit, and you're in. And hopefully that number will skyrocket twixt now and the goal, which is Monday, Independence Day, and the 15-year anniversary of the road to independence. All right, to our Free Farm Friday telephones and to our Free Farm Friday master farmers. I don't know where Brian is today, somewhere vacationing in Texas. Where Brian Koch of the Baron... the Baron of Dixie, where be you today?
Elton Wharton. I'm at the office.
Oh, I thought you were out all week long. You've been sending pictures. You're fishing one day. You're going down the Suwannee River the next day. I thought you were on vacation, man.
No, I was actually working. I had meetings.
You get to bring your kids to work with fishing poles? To
no,
work?
No, I was by myself.
Oh, okay. I must have been seeing Brian Kay's greatest hit photos.
No. I was. I had a meeting down in South Texas, and when I'm down there, I stay at my family's place, so I don't have to get a hotel. I'm saving money.
Well, have you started getting rain?
We had 3/4 of an inch on Monday, and we got a little bit overnight last night and a little couple showers this morning, but nowhere near what a lot of other people are getting.
Okay, well, it's raining every day here now in Southeast Louisiana, just in time for all of my dead crops to take advantage of it. So I prayed and begged for rain for 6 weeks and got 1 1/4 inches. And then in the last 5 days with dead crops, tomato plants that are all produced out and what have you, we've gotten 2.5 inches. So we're all full up on rain. To our other master farmer, Mitter Mundy is up in northern central Jersey. How is the weather in your neck of the proverbial woods?
Well, I think we have fine. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, gentlemen, sir.
I think we have finally hit summer. Starting to have a lot of days into the 90s. As a matter of fact, as much as I love warm weather, it even started to affect me a couple of days. But not 2 weeks ago, we had a couple of nights that went into the 40s. So
Wow.
It's still very up there. Still very up and down here. We don't have a rain problem. I'll tell you that. We've got a lot of good thunderstorms. Matter of fact, maybe a little too much now and again because I think some of my potatoes are rotting. But it'll come through and dump 2 inches and then, you know, in an hour. And then, you know, that's not the best way to get it. But now we have no rain. We have no moisture problem, but we have had a temperature problem.
It's and across the northern and midwestern United States, if you're like below the Mason-Dixon line, about around where North Carolina, South Carolina border is, you just draw a line across all the way to California, or draw a line all the way to Colorado and go north. That's been cold and it's been wet and has had no appreciable summer yet. Even though we're a full 10 days now into what should have been, we had the equinox, We had the equinox, the longest day, so we should be nearly into the full swing of summer. But in those places, it isn't, which kind of presents challenges for people that are trying to grow food. And it's one of the things that we talk about frequently here on Free Farm Friday is meeting those challenges. So to begin with today, there is a product that's out about there's a new thing that's been added to farming. It's called biocontrols. Biocontrols. And there is a link that Mitter Mundy sent to a company, an outfit called MeisterMedia.turtle.co. And they are pimping this this biocontrol. I can't even pronounce some of the things that they are advocating that we'll be able to grow so much more food. This sounds like genetically modified or chemically modified and enhanced food. What is this biocontrol crap, Mitter Mundy?
That link, everybody, I mean, there's not a lot of information. They're a rah-rah group, but that just kind of gives you the flavor of it so you can go do your own research. Biologics has actually been going on for quite a while, and it's not specifically just targeting agriculture. Our mRNA vaccine. The idea is instead of synthesizing all the different things, pesticides, herbicides, vaccines, whatever drugs out of chemicals, they're trying to adapt natural products or modify natural products, gene therapies, splicing. And the idea is we're going to introduce something natural that we fixed into the environment and control things that way, whether that be, remember a number of weeks ago or months ago, they were going to release those modified mosquitoes, maybe they did, in Florida to help.
Oh, that was Gates. That was Gates's idea.
Right. That's all part of this biologic movement and idea that
they're trying to kill us.
Man again is going to go in. Yeah, well, man again is going to go in there. So, we're going to take something that's natural now. Instead of just putting chemicals together and poisoning the ground, we're going to take something that's natural, mess it up, and then see what it does or doesn't do to the environment. Not to be fair to it, I mean, I've been doing some more reading on it because I've been seeing. If you look at that thing I sent on Meister Data, one thing you look at, it says, our sponsors. There's like, I don't know, 8 or 10 or 15 ag tech companies that are listed there.
Here's a company right here.
I don't even know who they are.
Sutera. It's called Sutera, or the chemical's called Sutera. And then the caption is, take back your crop. Learn how to modernize your approach to controlling diamondback moth with this free ebook. I bet what's in the free ebook ain't free at all, Mr. Brian Koch, is it?
No, and the future costs are unseen, the unintended consequences are unseen, and it's another, we got to do it right now or else.
Right, like global warming. If we don't do it now, then all the crops die and everyone starves to death.
Exactly.
Why are they always threatening us with the end of the world? They call us depressed people, and then you're always out there. You're always talking about how it's going to end your conspiracies with the end of the world. I don't think it's actually the end of the world. I think it's an attempt to bring about the end of the world. But these people are actually trying to do it.
Yeah, and they're just I mean, it's more doom and gloom than anything.
Well, Brian, you're a biologist. Tell the listeners out there what this stuff actually does to a natural ecosystem and a biosphere that was just hanging out there, minding its own business, creating trillions upon trillions of new little life forms every second out there. They're in your soil. What does it do to it?
Basically, you're introducing something that probably isn't native or plant adapted or animal adapted, whatever you're applying it to that situation. And what that does, it basically screws up ecosystem function. And so, it's basically a biological disturbance. And as we're seeing with mRNA and other gene modifying type deals, it has negative effects. So you might not see it, until it's too late. And so that's basically what's happening. So you're just going in and modifying genes and stuff you're putting a gene from another species into that one to either control it or to control a pest or whatever. And when you start messing with genes, you're gonna have problems immediately, or maybe not immediately, but maybe into future generations as well if they can reproduce. So it just it's basically defying nature.
Now, let me provide a counter narrative to this. I'm reading the book One Straw Revolution. It's a really easy book to read. I could probably knock it out in an afternoon if I just sat down and read it, just page after page. And this is about a guy in Japan who decided that he was, I'm only 50 pages in, but decided that farming was becoming unnatural, very hard work for no reason. And that then he started working on basically practicing the Brian Koch and partly the Dan Mundy, the master farmer method of farming. And he said that he found that the less interference that he injected into the natural process, the better the process worked. Like he gave the example of, he made the mistake of his uncle told him to go prune all of the trees in the mandarin orchard that he had. And he was only able to trim and prune about a third of them before World War II broke out and Japan got involved. And then he noticed that those trees were left unpruned and untended for a couple of years, and they were a disaster. They didn't produce. After a couple of years, they stopped producing fruit. But the ones that he couldn't get to that he left were still producing the same old fruit. And this was the genesis kind of his approach to farming, Brian. And he's adhering to Koch's principle, which do the least amount of damage, disturbance, as you what you call it, to the land that you're going to farm.
Yeah, correct. And you basically instead of fighting with whatever environmental factors or whatever are thrown at you, you're kind of going with them and working with them, kind of rolling with the punches, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It makes more sense. You eventually get to a point where your inputs are lower and you're not having to even do so much of, adding, it's more amending things and adding little things here and there that you've produced on site rather than hauling it in or buying it at the store or something like that and then putting it down.
Brian says that the mandarin trees that he pruned, that they became so twisted and tangled with one another that they basically strangled each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you start messing with things, especially certain trees. The more you cut them back, the worse they get. If you've ever South Texas is famous for mesquite trees, And one thing people will do is shred them with a shredder or bush hog, whatever you want to call it. And they come back with a vengeance. And their thorns are double and triple or quadruple what they wore from when you, the first time you cut it. So that makes it harder to deal with the plants. It's basically their defense mechanism. Citrus trees like satsumas and stuff have thorns too, if you've noticed. And you start cutting on them and you start doing things like that, that's that reaction to put more thorns or put more things to make it more difficult to get to that fruit. And that's what you're seeing. So, you know, the plants will respond to disturbance, and they'll respond enough until you eventually kill the root reserves and it kills the plants and something like that. But, you know, when you start tinkering with things, that's what happens. It starts acting negatively and it doesn't give you the desired effect.
Now, Mitter Monday, you also practice as non-disturbance where you can. You do disturb some, but in your livestock, you practice pretty much non-disturbance. What do you think about the Japanese farmer's example and the mandarin trees?
I think it's a perfect example. I mean, I had not heard that one. I'll give you another one if you want to catch up on that, because I know you're always, you know, looking for something to read with all the spare time you have. go read.
Yes, hours upon minutes upon seconds.
I know what Maggie says between taking out the bathroom time and trying to find something to read. You're annoying her, but she
has a habit of exaggerating on my bathroom time, but that's okay.
Read about Henry Ford and Harvey Firestone's attempt to do a rubber plantation in South America, and you know, the arrogance of, well, we'll show nature how to grow things, which is the same kind of analogy you're making here. Well, we're going to prune them, and it's not that we don't. I throw this out there because, like anything else, it's becoming, you know, pervasive in the ag community, and they're pushing it hard. And there's all these new companies, I don't know how new they are, I don't even want to research them, quite honestly, that are trying to push this. You know, insulin is an example of something like that. Now, we've done good things with insulin. Promoting the propagation of things in your area, like, you know, like natural ways that I try, but through rotation to with the animals for the ruminants to get worms off the pasture rather than trying to medicate them to do it. You know, to encourage positive predators like ladybugs to be there. You know, planting flowers around your garden to attract certain insects. Putting in sacrificial plantings to try to attract the insects to them, so they don't eat things you want. That could be considered similar to this type of approach and thought process. But you're not modifying something, throwing out into the environment, and wondering if you're going to have it attack something other than what you planned it attacking, or what, you know, or whatever other unforeseen, you know. One of the things about when you're manufacturing things, which is what I do for a living, you kind of have a pretty darn good idea of what you're putting into what you've structured it to do. You're working with very complex systems in a biologic environment. You know. Look at a stupid example of the movie Jurassic Park. Yeah, we put a couple frog DNA in there. We had no idea what we were doing. We got boys to turn into girls. Yeah, we don't understand what we're doing, but we do it anyway.
And remember, they programmed in.
It's the only.
Remember in Jurassic Park, Dan, they programmed in the lysine effect. The lysine contingency, remember? He says, yep. Well, do you want to invoke the lysine? Oh, no, we're not invoking the lysine. And supposedly they could release the lysine. Well, remember, in Jurassic Park 2, they released the lysine, and it didn't work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we thought it would, because that's what our tests showed. And again, I'm not against some of these things. I said there's some good aspects to this, but like anything else, you got big, you know, you got ag tech companies coming up just like the pharmaceuticals, and they're trying to do it in the same way and push the same thing with the same type of funding and the same type of backing, and ultimately I think you're going to see the same force of law behind some of it. So.
Okay, so this says, as more growers adopt biologicals, they will learn these new products can outperform synthetics in the field, which Marone says they absolutely will. Not only that, biologicals are superior for many reasons, and the fast-talking scientist turned CEO. She hasn't worked in a lab for decades, but she was originally an entomologist. It says that as superiority becomes more evident, a sea change in crop protection is coming. And now this says to me, Brian Koch, that this is the, these biologicals, you know, this is becoming a field of investment. One of my daughters is dating a guy that has a finance degree from Georgetown University. And when I asked her the other day what he was doing, she said she he had quit the brokerage firm and he was working with a new investment venture capital group. And I said, what are they venture capitaling, investing in? Brian Koch, can you take a guess what they're venture capital investing in? And I started looking at this. This is where the trillions of dollars are going to be thrown. This is a monster that they are raising here, brother. And it's not just in the mRNA. This is basically mRNA for the biological world. And if it does to plants what it's doing to humans, we are in big, big trouble, Brother Koch.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know,
By the way, the answer to the question is biologics.
Yeah, biological. Yeah.
Biologicals.
Yeah, and, you know, I think we're out kicking our coverage. We don't know what we're doing. And
we're out kicking our coverage.
Yeah, I mean, we're trying to do things that we think we know we're doing. I mean, to be honest, you know, we didn't really know a lot what was going on with our soils except until the past, you know, 20 or 30 years. I'm not saying not everybody didn't, because there were people, pioneers, that were doing things and they were just shunned because they weren't doing what everybody else is doing. Or they'd go to the coffee shop and get talked about or something, whatever. But they knew it worked, and they didn't maybe not know exactly why or where or how, but they knew what worked. And then now this is something, you know, we're trying to, you know, do things without full knowledge. You know, there's no effectiveness studies. There's no safety, you know, what they're looking at or anything. It sounds very familiar, you know, and, you know, we're going to create another, you know, just like you said, another monster that's going to end up being, you know, worse than overuse of chemicals.
Well, there's another point to be made about this, gentlemen. We're in the middle of a Free Farm Friday with our master farmers and all-around good and smart guys, Mr. Dan Mundy, the old farmer from upper mid-state New Jersey, and Brian Koch from nearly southeast Texas here. There's another thing that's at work here. Now, why do it's a trillion-dollar investment. It's billions now. It'll grow, they believe, to the trillions in these biologics here, meaning that they intend for every ag outfit on earth to be using these products. Okay? Let's understand. But ladies and gentlemen, God provides for this creation for us because we are the reason that the earth was created. This is why you must, if you're going to talk about any of this, you must be a creationist. It has to start with creation. If you add any element of what they call evolution into it, you're screwed. You're going to wind up siding with them, and then you're going to aid and assist them, and you're going to help them in bringing this terror about. So let's go to the root of this. This is not about growing more food. It simply isn't. That's just a lie. That's a cover. It is about creating the conditions where these big ag company, quote, farmers, close quote, become addicted to these biologics like they previously became addicted to bigger and better ways to destroy the land and till it, and then bigger and supposedly better ways to genetically modify the seeds to deal with that, and then bigger and better ways to pump fertilizer, fake nutrients, man-made nutrients into the soil here. All you're doing is creating, this is a make-work usury product here. All you're doing here is this is the latest scam to make something necessary that is not necessary, but you got to con enough people, or you got to get them to participate in it. And at every step of the way, then, and you had the usury chain. You had the people that provided the funding to kick the whole damn thing off. Now you're going to have people that have to provide the funding for the distribution network, and then for the experts and the consultants, and on and on and on. Sooner, at the end of the day, now you have a $1 trillion industry that didn't exist 10 years ago. That's what they're doing, Mittermundi.
Well, and they have it locked in, Mike. You've got the whole, the pieces are there. I mean, the biggest seed supplier to everybody right now is Monsanto, which is Bayer.
That's right.
And, you know, that's why I've always harped about, you've heard, you know, especially with the animals, you know, get the heritage animals and start breeding them yourself. The same thing with the seeds. You know, a lot of us are doing that. You're going to some of these select seed people. Of course, they can't supply the nation. Who supplies it? Monsanto. A lot of these biologics and applications are going to start with seeds before you even put it on the soil. So you're not going to, you know, you're going to go over to, you know, Lowe's or Home Depot and or wherever and buy a couple packets of seeds. Yeah, I'm growing my own stuff. You are, but you're buying their stuff. So you need to be more educated and a little bit more judicious in what it is and where you're getting it from. So but they've already locked the pattern in. You know, the government and the money men are going to make the developments. They're going to give it to Monsanto, who's going and the big guys have no choice. You know, when they're buying tons and tons of seed for their hundreds and thousands of acres, you know, they're not going to go buy it at Home Depot. They have to buy it there, and it's been locked in. Just like we're doing with the vaccines and all the drugs. You see the same usury chain that they've created.
Yeah, and Brian, this is from the Meister Media pamphlet that Mittermundi sent us from under the subheading Biotech Revolution. It may seem hard to grasp now, with biological products having just 5% of the market, how much agriculture will change in the coming two decades, Marone says. Now, I'm not even going to read the rest of it, but I will. A lot of it has to do with the numbers. She notes that the relative cost to develop a new synthetic product is now estimated at $300 million. Brian, what could you and I do if we could find an investor to give us $300 million? We could buy 300,000 3-acre plots of land or larger plots of land to divide into 3 acres, put people on them with a cow and do regenerative farming, and the dividends that would pay off, not just in agriculture, not just in livestock, but the dividends would pay off in people who would get closer to the land. They would live from it, not on it. The dividends that would pay off would also be spiritual. These would be, by and large, good people who I would predict would make common cause with their neighbors, would practice charity and solidarity at a local level. They would become really good Christians, many of them really good Catholics. This would develop community. What could you and I do with that $300 million?
Well, it sounds like we could feed a lot of people and teach them how to feed themselves.
That's the thing.
And yeah, I mean, I don't know, there's so many benefits to it, and I think we're seeing it. You know, I sent that video yesterday to the Free Farm group about the fella. He's not even a Catholic guy, but he went to visit the guys over and the people in the monastery in Ohio that are, you know, leasing and they're milking the cows and stuff. And it was interesting because it's a homesteading family of 8 people that go to daily mass and everything. They weren't even, I mean, it wasn't, not saying they're not trying to evangelize, but it wasn't hard to evangelize by bringing him to their farm and teaching them about daily mass and teaching them about, you know, the regenerative practices they're doing. And, you know, if we could do that and make little, what, you know, brush fires of regenerative Catholic movement everywhere with that money, I think we could have a big effect.
Now, I want to go back to one straw revolution here. Brian, there's another chapter in there where, I wish I could pronounce it or remember his name so I could pronounce it fluently. The book is One Straw Revolution. There's another chapter in there, Brian, where he writes about rice farming in Japan. And he even says, and this is in the 1950s, he says that the University of Tokyo actually provided the scientists, the biologists, to go out and study the people like him who were just doing rice fields. They weren't doing paddies. They weren't row farming rice. They were just throwing it out there all in the cover crop and letting it grow. And they compared the same acreage for his and the rice yield that he was getting from the acreage, from the yield that was getting out of the road and maintained and fertilized and what have you, rice paddy fields like we have here in Louisiana. And he said every year with 1/10 of the investment in labor and money, every year he either made the same amount of rice or he made more.
Yeah.
Every year.
Mm-hmm. And this is because he didn't have enough disturbance that set back everything that he did the previous years. And so he just kept building and building and building. And it, like I said, it just happened to build enough soil that it created a healthier ecosystem. And when you have healthier soil, you're going to produce more nutrient-dense food that is actually tastes good, and it has flavor, because flavor equals nutrition. I think we see so much of this junk food here, and look how much flavoring and seasoning and sugar and everything that's added to it to make it palatable. If you grow regeneratively, you're going to have tastier food. I mean, it's so connected, but that's what it is. You keep building that soil, and you keep following those five principles that we talked about, and you keep doing that, and you're eventually going to have not only your healthier food and healthier soil, but you're going to have that actual biological control. You're going to bring in good things, predator insects to eat the pest. You're going to bring in, insects in the soil that are going to eat the weed seed. They'll prefer the weed seeds to the good stuff. You're going to do all this stuff that it's going to call this chain interaction to build back to what it should be. Because, take for example, and it's not really a biological effect, it's more of a hydrological. But look where they build straight line ditches.
Okay.
And you look in the bottom of that ditch after a couple of years. What is that water trying to do? If you look, pay attention closely, it's going to meander. It wants to meander. It doesn't want to go straight. And that's why they have to do continuing maintenance on levees and channels and everything else, because water wants to act and go where it wants to go. It doesn't want to go straight where we want it to go. It's the same thing with an ecological system. It wants to default back to plant growth and a successional community. I'm talking into these biological terms, but basically your successional community is what your soil is designed for, and it's going to allow a prairie. The soils are specifically designed for grasses and low-growing shrubs and things like that, but not giant trees. And that's why there's no trees naturally on the plain, because your successional community is grass and tall grass and tall, shrubs and forbs. Where a forest, its successional community is trees, but your soils are different. There's different pH, there's different animals on the, on that land in there. There's different things going on, and that's what creates, these diverse ecosystems. But when you take an area and clear it, especially around here, a lot of this land was forest, and it wants to go back to that forest type situation. That's why you have trees popping up and things when you stop mowing. So, part of that is you embrace that and understand what that community wants to be, and you work your system into that system.
Yeah, Brian, put a graphic into the chat room, the One Straw Revolution, an introduction to natural farming. Masanobu Fukuoka We also talk natural farming around here when it comes to livestock, and that's one of Mitter Monday's fortes. Dan, did you get a chance to listen to, before the the Dobbs decision came down, Ross McKnight talking last week here about the Muscovy ducks that he has, up to 1,000 now on his ranch, the Bywater Fuqua Ranch right here in Bush, Louisiana, and about the great southern sheep that he said was native to these areas, that there were only dozens of these things. They were going to be extinct. There were only dozens of them. There was a little farm family in Mississippi, kept the breed alive, and now Ross McKnight has some here in Louisiana, and they're continuing to breed them and decrease the population. And come to find out, it's actually a good meat sheep.
Oh yeah, I did get to listen to him. I'm still trying to research. He made the comment that Muscovies are really, they're not ducks, and I haven't been able to research. It was interesting.
He said they're geese.
Yeah, I know. I haven't. I'm not doubting him. I'm trying to do a little research on that when I had some time. But because I've gave you some of my duck breast. I don't know if you ate.
Oh, they're delicious. We love them.
Yeah. And you know, I bought. I don't raise that many ducks because they're very hard to process unless you're going to get more equipment. You know, you got to put wax on them and pull the pin feathers, so you got to sit there for an hour with a pair of tweezers. I didn't look that cheap up yet. I'm sure they're in the Livestock Conservancy, and that's what's happening. I had a couple of these little places that, you know, like you talked about the apples, there's a couple of places that have just kind of hung on to them and were trying to identify them. I mean, one of the things you see in a lot of the warmer climates like down there, and these are not what he's raising primarily, but they're hair sheep. They don't have any wool. We only raise them for meat, and they shed, and you don't have to shear them, and they're meant for a harder environment. So, I mean, there's a lot of these down south there. I'm surprised you don't see the cracker cattle around you. I know they're down in Florida, and again, they're hot weather. You don't try to raise a Holstein or not an Angus down in South Florida. You just don't do that. Unless you're going to be like Henry Ford and say, oh, I'm going to take rubber trees and plant them all in rows and do it the way I think it needs to be, and I'm going to tell nature to grow that way. You go read about it. You know, you go tell nature what it's going to do. And as Brian says, it's going to meander is what it's going to do.
Dan, the greatest river in the North American continent of North America is the Mississippi River. It is a well-known fact here in Southeast Louisiana that the Mississippi River wants to meander. We were in Grand Coteau, Louisiana, for the Congress. If you drew a parallel line from where we were and Bayou Teche, just go straight west, you would run basically into a little town called Abbeville. And in Abbeville, Louisiana, is where the Mississippi River makes one of its great turns, a ginormous horseshoe turn. It is well known that the United States Army Corps of Engineers has refused to allow the river to make that. It wants to go across the delta. So it would either spring a smaller river, which would go south and west, and cross the delta and continue to Mississippi, or what is more likely is that the water flow, would pick up a little speed because it wouldn't go around that bend. And picking up the speed, it would find other weak spots where there were no levees. And there are natural scientists, Dan, that believe that the Mississippi River wants to come out where is today Morgan City, Louisiana.
I bet you Morgan City doesn't want that.
Well, Morgan City already has a river. It's called the Red River. There already is a river there. So what they say is that the Mississippi will join up with the Red River, and they'll both dump out into the Gulf of Mexico in the same place.
Then, other than man's arrogance, why is the Army Corps of Engineers opposing the change?
Because we can't allow the port of New Orleans to not be the port of New Orleans. Now,
it's going to move the delta, okay.
Yeah, now, okay, but no one makes the case and no one makes the argument because it's not studied other than people like me and one little scientist guy at Tulane University that know, Dan, that the future of the city of New Orleans, if the river does keep going there, the city doesn't have a future. We've talked about this before. If you don't blow a 200-yard hole, wide hole in that levee in several different places and allow the city to flood 3 or 4 feet mildly every year. The city is done. It's cooked. It's over. And it ultimately will sink down into the earth, which is what it's doing here. This is, again, man taking a situation here, and instead of working with the river and letting it flood, and then working, okay, well, then don't build houses on slabs where the river floods every year. And, you know, for 150 to almost 200 years, the people that lived on the banks of the Mississippi River built houses on stilts. Mm-hmm. Wait, we're not talking about 20-foot tall. I'm talking about 4 or 5. You've seen them. Go down St. Charles Avenue, you can see them, 5-6 feet.
Yep. That was all down that. Well, I'm trying to remember the name of the city, and it wasn't Alexandria. There was a city in Egypt I watched a whole series on. It was the same thing. It was a very big port city, you know, giant temples. Big, and it was,
I know the name of the city, Memphis.
Yeah, Memphis.
Right.
And they're doing a bunch of archaeological underwater excavation. Basically, it sank. The river silted over. They lost the port, and it kind of sank. That's what's going to happen to New Orleans, I suppose. But.
All right. It is so. We're in a full swing of summer here in the Great South, Baron Koch, Brian Koch, and Dan Money, our master farmers. Brian, my bougie development corn developed. I think it actually grew too tall, but we were able to maybe harvest 20 ears of corn. What?
It didn't grow too tall. We had a hailstorm.
Yeah, we had a hailstorm that decimated it. We were able to harvest maybe 20 ears of eaten corn, and some of it was not developed. We left it on the stalk. I guess in the super heat, even though I was watering it every day, it wasn't enough. So all the corn that remained the last 12, 15 ears that we pulled, are all hard. You can boil that stuff for 2 hours and it won't matter. It's hard. So we're taking the remainder of it and we're going to just let it dry out.
Yeah.
But I don't know how to grind corn and I don't have a grinder.
You have a coffee grinder?
I do.
You could use that. I'll go buy a cheap one.
Okay.
Or you can find a little hand crank one for pretty cheap too. And you can do that. That's what we use. But it'll work.
Okay. Now, so my final question then for is mainly for you, Brian, but Dan can answer as well. I am one of these pioneering homesteaders that's going west. Okay. So I have a piece of property that has just natural grass growing there. It was grazed by cows once upon a time here. So I basically have the ideal homesteading in environment. I think that we'll be able to do some work by the middle of, to the end of this month or early August on it. I guess I could grow another a crop of corn. I could probably plant some more maters. But should I just leave that ground as it is and just get ready to cover it with something to kind of knock it down like I did with the bougie development corn? Or is there something that maybe I should plant as a cover to get it ready? Or just don't do anything. And when it comes trying to plant the bougie development corn, just get a splitter that's just going to make me a little incision into the land, you will. Drop the seeds in there and let it be done.
You have a few options. You can let the grass grow and terminate it as it is and grow a fall, like vegetable, broccoli, cabbage, and stuff. You're in a zone where that stuff's not going to freeze. It's not going to get cold enough to freeze. So you can grow that through the winter. So broccoli, cabbage, lettuces, and things like that. You could cover crop it with like a sorghum Sudan or millet. Maybe some cowpeas, black-eyed peas or something like that. And you can actually harvest the peas, and then when you're done, you can kill that and plant your cool season vegetables into it. You could kill the grass immediately and plant your corn. I mean, you have a lot of options.
But I have a lot of room, too. I can plant a lot of stuff. I'm not limited.
You know, try, you know, if you've got the time, try different things. See, start figuring out what works for you right there. It's not too late. And you can do, you have a lot of options. I'm just throwing out there right now. You have a lot of options, and, you know, I can, you know, follow up with you later and, you know, kind of walk you through some of the stuff.
You and Suzanne are bringing the kids. You're coming to spend a weekend. You're not getting out of it. You're not getting out of it that easy. All right. Okay. Hang on just a second. Mitter Mundy, what is your sage advice? And it always is sage advice.
Well, I appreciate that. It's you got a couple acres there. I mean, I'd fence it and I'd
okay, it's already fenced. Animal. It's fenced.
Okay. Well, then I would, you know, tie it up, because I don't know the lay of it, and if it's totally flat, and if there's any, tie it up a little bit, try a couple of crops in a couple of the areas, and put a cow or put some goats on the other part of it, and get ready to start rotating, because that's ultimately what you're going to want to do.
Mitter's chair is not a goat lady.
Well, I'm not a goat person either. I do not like goats.
No, her mother loves goats and has a pair of goats.
No, when I get Mrs. Mundy where she should,
I want to get a donkey because I hear donkeys repel everything.
Well, they can be good. They can be good protector animals, but they can also protect them against you too. So just be careful.
Oh.
Do you remember the scene in my presentation where the bucket was on the sheep's head? That's because he came up behind me and knocked me over. So I put the bucket on his head. So just, you know, and you're gonna, you know. Brian said it, and I said it in the presentation. You want to go start finding why things work.
Right. No,
you're going to learn, and you're going to have some modifications. You're going to try to make nature do a little bit of what you want, but you're going to want to find out why things work. So I would not limit yourself to, you know, you might do a few row crops for yourself. You want to put some grasses on it. You know, pick an animal of choice if you have somebody there to be able to watch them, and put them on a piece of it, and see how that starts to work out for you, because you're going to want a rotation.
Okay.
So that, yeah.
All right, it sounds good. One of Mitter's idea, Brian, and we got to go. We're out of time. Is to have what she's calling a chicken run. You kind of have a chicken run, don't you?
Well, I use the chicken tractor, so I move my coops daily.
Well, I will let you know what happens with all that. Guys, have a wonderful Independence Day weekend, and let's truly work on being truly independent. Brian, so a blessed weekend to you and your family coming up. Mitter Mundy to you, too. And this will wrap up another episode of Free Farm of Friday here. By the way, guys, gentlemen, ladies, get that book. This is a nice, easy read. He's an author that's not pushing any point of view other than nature. I think Brian would agree with that. The book, mm-hmm. One Straw Revolution. It's just easy to read. It's enjoyable. I liked his story where he's going like, well, they went and did all this, that, and the other. I just kind of kicked back and threw my seeds out there and went and then sat on the porch and drank sake and smoked weed. It's basically what he says. One Straw Revolution. It's a good book. Brian, God bless you and your family, man. We'll talk to you next week.
God bless you, Mike. And y'all pray for us. We actually are going on vacation next week. We're driving to Albuquerque tomorrow.
Okay. All right. Safe travels, brother.
Thank you.
All right. God bless. You too. Mitter Mundy, I don't have to tell you to go be independent because you are an independent rabble-rouser like me. So go and be independent and be fruitful and multiply your animals.
They're doing very well, as long as I get rid of the predators. I decided I wouldn't put those pictures I sent you in the chat room. They might upset people, but... that's all right. I did defy nature. I cleared that nest of raccoons out. So.
I'm not sure what coons are useful for, but it's not for being around humans and protecting anything that we seem to have. So I don't know what God made the raccoon for, but he didn't make them for us to make pets out of them or for us to keep them around on our farms and homesteads.
That's for sure, but they're gone. They are dispatched.
They're gone. All right, Mitter Mundy. God bless you and you. Tell Alexander that we all said hi.
I will do that. He should be around. He's working most of the weekend, but I'll probably see him Monday. I will definitely tell him. Thank you.
All right, brother. Well, I'll cook something and say, put the pictures in our emails and signal groups on Monday, what we'd be barbecuing. God bless you, Dan. We'll talk soon, buddy.
Yep. God bless Mike and everybody. Thank you.
Buddy.
Yep. God bless Mike and everybody. Thank you.